Every play, every stat, every breakdown, on their own they're essential, but altogether they're undeniable. Introducing Huddle Instat, a new advanced data platform that integrates with sports code and every Huddle product you rely on to create an all-in-one data powerhouse. Huddle Instat's advantaged tagging and next-level stat reports help you develop your team, and its global film library helps you find the missing pieces to get the most out of every second of film. Learn more at huddle.com/aquicktimeout.
He's a college basketball analyst for both ESPN and SiriusXM Radio, and whether or not he wanted this title, with this his third appearance on the podcast, he has moved into being a regular on the show. He's Chris Pizzola. Chris, welcome to the show.
What a lifetime achievement, Tony. That's awesome. I appreciate it, brother. It's good to see you. You and I go way back.
So it's great to see you. It's been longer than I think it has. It's probably been, I think it's close to like 8 or 9 years now, which is crazy, but had the chance to do some cool stuff up there at the Durham area, and some stuff coming up this summer that we'll talk about a little bit later on. I'll start with this, the basketball portion, even though right now I feel like most people really aren't paying attention to the basketball side of things. From a coaching team building perspective, how impressive was the job that Dan Hurley and UConn did this year?
It's incredible. You know, it was in many ways, I think we assumed they would be good. I don't think we expected a back-to-back championship given the turnover in their roster and the pieces that they left. And then certainly, the preseason expectations. I don't think we expected another title from him. But, Dan's a special guy now. You know, he is, I think he's coming around at exactly the right time. And he's, I've likened to say he's a wonderful combination of ego and down to earth. You know, he's good, and he knows he's good, and he's not shy about sharing that. But there's also an everyman to Dan Hurley that I think has a lot to do with the fact that he's had to earn everything. You know, he has sort of built his coaching career organically, 10 years at the high school level, varying levels, in terms of D1 coaching, Wagner, Rhode Island, and now at UConn. And he sort of spans generations, Tony. I mean, you know, guys who can sort of, throw back to, when Dan grew up in the 80s to playing in the 90s, obviously seeing the game in some ways through his brother's eyes, seeing it through his dad's eyes. He's been around a long time. And I think he's a demanding guy. And I think a lot of that stems from, the equity he has in the game and how the demands put on him helped make him better. And so I think where, this generation of athlete is and where the game is currently, I think Dan Hurley comes around at exactly the right time.
I think about the back-to-back champions, the 06, 07 Florida team, and then the 90s Duke teams. And those rosters were basically the same guys from year to year. And you alluded to this, but this wasn't the case. I've thought thoroughly about every single team that has won a championship in the last 25 years. But how impressive is that portion of it where you are essentially building a brand new roster, and just how quick the turnaround has to be to have a team at that caliber?
Yeah, it's a great point. There's two ways I've looked at it. I mean, first of all, if you were so much of this analysis, because the game has changed so much now to where it was in 2007 or 1992, certainly that Duke roster, that Florida roster, they were largely the same. The other thing you have to remember, so were other rosters. I mean, there wasn't as much movement then. So, a lot of the rosters that Duke and Florida were playing against, they were the same, they were older. So I think the profile there, I mean, a lot of the analysis you have to do with the UConn team versus those two teams that went back to back is on paper, because the game is so different. Look, you ask me, that Duke roster and that Florida roster up and down were better than UConn's roster. Now, a lot of that is largely subjective. But the thing that was impressive about the way that UConn went about it is a lot of who they became this year was largely cultural, built over time. And that's sort of the carryover we're not seeing as much. A lot of the habits, a lot of the way in which UConn goes about their business, while the roster was different this year, it was largely the same to that group last year. They play hard. They're unselfish. They offensively, the stuff that Dan is doing, there's a carryover from that group last year to this year. So the fact that you're able, even with the turnover, and even with the fact that you have a freshman or a transfer in your starting lineup that were not there last year, the fact that, a lot of that cultural stuff, the way they play, the attitude they play with, a lot of that carried over. And to me, that's really hard to do now. And that was really impressive.
How much is basketball coaching now, because of what you just mentioned, culture building and people building, versus what we traditionally think of basketball, X's and O's and systems?
Yeah, it's hard to say that that's new, because I feel like any form of leadership, and it was like that, you know, when I was in the service, you know, so much of it, while you could have a technical and a tactical expertise, leadership has always been about the management of people, and how you manage those people ultimately drives the culture that you end up having. And that's where I think, you know, a guy like Dan Hurley, who has sort of combines that old school approach to things, and the demands that he puts on his players, the tone that he speaks to them with. But there's a new age element to him as well. And I think that's where those coaches who have had the ability to adapt over time in the management of people are the coaches who have had the advantage. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the academic components of the game. And obviously that's an important component of it all. But unless you can relate to, you know, those players who you're asking to ultimately execute, you know, that academic component, the X and O component of it, unless there's a buy-in, unless there's an ownership that's driven by the top, it's hard to see that translating. And that's where I think it's hard to say that that's a new component, but I certainly think the coaches who can do it quickly enough with the roster turnover, I think has been a force multiplier and certainly an advantage.
So I want to ask you, based off of what you just said there, we're like 2-3 years into this NIL transfer portal, the coupling of them.
Yeah.
And you've already seen coaches go about it differently. With Dan, UConn, you have a couple of guys that he recruited, but then bringing in transfers. And then I feel like you have the complete opposite of the pendulum there, swing, and John Calipari at Kentucky, and then even John Shire there at Duke, where you're kind of purely recruiting in guys. Do you think coaches will continue to do things differently like that? I just think of even like with John there at Duke, I think he's been incredible at brand new guys come in and having some struggles for various reasons for the first few months, and then kind of really flourishing at the very end where you want to be peaking. But then on the flip side of it, like we just said, you have Dan Hurley who's brought in transfers. Do you think that you'll continue to see both of those kinds of strategies, or will it eventually purely be let's bring in transfers and kind of add a couple pieces to them?
Yeah, I think it depends on the program. Certainly, you know, in the case of John, you know, they have built a brand around bringing in these uber talented freshmen, and John has capitalized on that. He was certainly a part of, at the end of Coach K's tenure there, certainly a part of the proliferation of that recruiting dynamic for them. It's hard to shut that faucet off, especially as these five-star kids continue to say they want to come play for you. I think the balance for John and for any coach, Tony, and I think coaches are starting to figure this out, that the hardest way to win in college basketball right now is the one-year rental. And that could be the one and done, the freshman who comes in and is only there for a year. But I think we're also seeing it in the portal. One of the things for Dan Hurley is he gets Tristan Newton for 2 years. And the way in which he went about getting Tristan Newton was interesting. Like when Connecticut was in the AAC, they played against ECU, Connecticut did. And Tristan Newton went for 25 against Connecticut in a game that they played against UConn. And when Dan Hurley sees his name in the poll, he's like, wait a second, that guy gave us buckets. We, you know, like let's dive into who Tristan Newton is. you know, it's the same thing with a Cam Spencer. You know, again, they're not going to get him for another year, but you get a guy, you do your research, and all of a sudden, while they initially wanted a Nick Timberlake, they missed on him. Sometimes you got to get a little bit lucky, and then sometimes you got to do your research on a guy like Spencer who fits. I mean, his identity is almost, you know, identical to a Bob Hurley or a Dan Hurley. I mean, it's amazing how that fit. So I think the idea of getting guys who fit who you are, you know, a Stephon Castle who's coming in for the right reasons, who is insulated. I think that's where, that freshman dynamic, I think, is, as we've seen, can flourish the best, where you are bringing those talented freshmen in, but you're insulating them with an upperclassman group that can teach culture and can bring some of the maturity, the emotional maturity, the basketball maturity to that dynamic. So I think it's shifting, but I do think it's getting harder and harder to win with strictly those freshmen. And that's where I think a guy like John is trying to figure that dynamic out as he's continuing to bring in a flood of them.
Well, last thing I'll ask you about UConn, but I saw somebody ask this on Twitter, and I thought it'd be good to ask you. You spent time on the Duke staff and prepared for high-level opponents. How would you prepare for a team like UConn with their style on the offensive end? Just with, you have so much movement and those elements of European basketball where you're guarding one thing, but then there's also one or two other things going on the other side of the floor there. More so of like preparing for big actions, or I saw one person responded and just said a lot of prayer. So maybe your only hope.
Yeah, a lot of prayer helps. The number of individual defenders you have, you know, every guy out there needs to be able to defend their matchup. You know, there's two things I would say. First of all, you have to be committed for the full 30 seconds of the possession. You know, you can't guard them for 10 seconds. You can't guard them for 15. You have to be locked in for the full 30 because they are running offense until they get a quality shot. The other thing is your communication, Tony, has to be at a master level. And you don't always have to be right, but you always have to be on the same page. Two guys, you're not wrong if you're on the same page, and you have to communicate what you're trying to do there, whether it's a switch, whether it's a ball screen coverage. Your communication has to be at an all-time high. And then the final thing is you have to finish the possession with a rebound. What I thought changed the game in the second half for UConn against Purdue was UConn's ability to offensive rebound from the guard position. You know, that's the other thing. Like, your guards have to be committed to finishing the possession with a defensive rebound. All of those things are easier said than done. But I think, you know, look, we saw it throughout the tournament. You know, UConn's ability, and they're never in a rush. Yeah. You know, that's the other thing that stood out to me, and it's manifested largely through Tristan Newton. They're never in a rush. They play at an unbelievable pace. They're committed to working their stuff until they get the quality shot, and then they're just maniacal on the offensive glass. So it's obviously an incredible challenge defending them.
A Quick Timeout podcast is presented by Dr. Dish Basketball. Dr. Dish machines are the most advanced shooting machines on the market. If you haven't already, join top programs like the Miami Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Duke Blue Devils, and countless others, and upgrade to Dr. Dish Basketball. And now, save an extra $300 on select models when you mention Quick Timeout Podcast. To find out more, visit drdishbasketball.com.
Hey coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes, so why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, free app that provides you with data to make strategic decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Keep parents, friends, and supporters engaged like never before. With Game Changer's free live streaming, fans can catch every jump shot, every steal, every victory from the palm of their hand, no matter where they're at. And with real-time scorekeeping and detailed star tracking, fans get live score updates while you get stats for your team that can build all season long. Post-game, you and your staff can review full game footage while your athletes get automatically generated highlight clips of every scoring play, assist, rebound, steal, and block. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream, score, connect.
Coaches especially seem enamored with the coaching carousel each year. Has this been the greatest coaching carousel of all time?
Hard to quantify, but sometimes my analysis is best done when it can't be quantified. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly when, look, I think Kentucky at some times, they certainly consider themselves the center of the universe. And I think they can be at times for obvious reasons. I think when a coach of his own volition decides to vacate that job, I think it certainly is going to vault that conversation to the top. And then when multiple coaches have turned down the Kentucky job, we are certainly living in a new world. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think this carousel has been incredibly unique. You know, the dominoes falling, you know, Andy Enfield leaving USC and then Muscle, you know, like those dominoes are very typical. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, that Kentucky goes through the dominoes that it has gone through and the fact that that job is being looked at differently than it was 10 years ago, I think certainly changes the conversation about this year's carousel.
This would be purely clickbait if I put it in words, but at this moment, is that Kentucky job a great job?
Yeah, I think it is certainly still one of the top 10 jobs. Now, I think at a point in time, again, 10 years ago, certainly when Cal took it, I think you could consider it a, you know, perhaps a top 5 job. Again, how do you quantify that? And I think that's the root of the question. Like, how do you quantify that job? I think money, you know, certainly money is important, but it wasn't important to a guy like Scott Drew. And so what is Scott Drew when he looks at that situation? What is he seeing? Well, he's seeing A, what he had built at Baylor. I think the continuity that he had grown there, similar to a Jay Wright or similar to a Coach K, you know, these folks, you know, at this point now, Bill Self, like that continuity and being at a job for a long time and building what you have built there is, I think that's meaningful. You know, the management of all the stuff around your program, mm-hmm. I think is also a major consideration. I mean, you know this, like when you have a fan base, and I think Billis says it the best about Kentucky, they have great fans. They have a fringe that has outsized expectations or outsized demands. They have a fringe of that fan base that can get a little bit sideways. The problem with Kentucky is their fringe is a lot larger than the typical fringe. Mm-hmm. So I think that is absolutely a consideration. The other thing you have to understand is the SEC is a lot different now than it was, again, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, that league is incredibly competitive. And so it's, you know, that's another factor. And then the football piece of this, you know, you look at whatever we would consider the best jobs, you know, Duke, Carolina, Kansas, you know, in Indiana, throw whatever. The majority of those jobs, Tony, are jobs where basketball has been king. And as the landscape has shifted, certainly in the SEC and certainly at a place like Kentucky, I mean, that's ultimately what I think what ran Coach Cal into some issues when he calls Kentucky a basketball school and the head football coach and the AD are looking at that saying, don't say that out loud. Like this dynamic has changed. I think that's another situation there at Kentucky where does it diminish the how coaches look at that as a job? Maybe, maybe not, but it certainly makes it different.
Yeah. You spoke to the leadership component earlier, you're around the game and talk to a lot of different coaches. I get the question from a lot of young coaches, what do I need to be doing? What skills do I need to be developing to be successful in this climate? What would you say are the things that need to be developed if you're going to meet the needs of not just the basketball program, but also being that CEO of the entire program?
I think you have to have a set of non-negotiables, mm-hmm. a set of standards within your program that are non-negotiable, that you will not relent on. Yeah. Now, how you convey that and how you're not going to reach everybody. And there's, you know, I think going into that with the understanding that we're going to treat every individual who comes into our program is different. Every individual is unique, and we're going to speak and talk to those players differently. And we're going to treat each person, you know, as a unique individual. But there are certain things that you're going to have to meet in order to be a part of this program. And those who are not willing to do that become expendable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you're seeing the best coaches, the coaches who have figured this out, are willing to coach the individual and are willing to look. Talented players that we're going to spend more time. We're going to coach those guys differently, but ultimately, if they don't meet the standard, that's when they become expendable. You know, the less talented players on your are going to have to be those guys who are teaching those standards. They've got to, you know, carry their own water in terms of their value. But I think it becomes a misconception that, you know, well, we have to relent. I mean, you know, like that's one of the things Coach K did the best is, you know, the values that he maintained his last year as a coach were the same values he kept dear to his heart when he first became the coach at Army. The way in which he conveyed those and the way in which he imparted those values changed over time. He evolved. And I think that's where, you know, what do you value as a coach? What are you unwilling to relent on in terms of what you want your program to be about? And then how do we go about imparting that to each individual player?
I feel in this climate, more so than even in the past, weak cultures will be exposed.
Yeah.
And I think that what you just said, the core values are what really make your culture. And if you don't have strong core values or don't convey those, that you're not going to be as successful as you want to be. I guess I kind of college, bigger picture, but just college basketball in general, do you feel like college basketball is in a good place?
Yeah, I think there are parts of it, a lot of parts of it that are in a really good place. I do. I mean, first of all, like ratings for the tournament are up. First of all, we have to get out of this comparing the men's game to the women's game. You know, they are on different trajectories and paths, and the women's game is great. And so is the men's game. They're different. And I think we have to get out of this, you know, I think if we're not there already, we are encroaching into this area of comparing the two. They're very different. I think there are great parts of our game. Viewership is going up. But there are also parts of it, Tony, that I think we have in some ways taken for granted. I think the way in which we do scheduling now in college basketball is incredibly antiquated. The fact that we're playing 20 conference games in the months of January and February as we grow more and more viewers to the sport, I think is a problem, a real problem. I think we need to look at the way in which we do the schedule differently. I think the fact that, you know, things like the transfer portal being open the Monday after Selection Sunday is ridiculous. And nobody has looked at something like that and said, wait a second, this is a little bit out of whack. Should we be playing the national championship game at 9:20 on a Monday night? Again, small thing, but all things that go into the narrative of your sport. Look, we are different in that we don't get a Caitlin Clark for 4 years, but we are unique in that we have some amazing matchups that we can create in this sport, some amazing brands that we have in this sport. And we have some really good venues. Like I think we are, you know, we are starting to get to this point where, you know, the venue and the selling of your venue and your environment in your home arena is becoming a big part of our sport. So I think there's some really good things, Tony, but I think we are still in this place of decision makers, committees making decisions around the game. And I think sometimes, you know, expansion of the tournament, for example, as a conversation piece, I think sometimes college basketball is seen as a trash receptacle, as a place to sort of, you know, exercise, you know, think tank ideas that have really no place in our game. So there are some really good things about it, and there are things that I think we need to continue to look at. And I hope coaches understand that we are at a real precipice. Like we're at an existential point here in the men's game that I think there are things we can build upon, but we can't take it for granted. Like we have to continue to move forward with the growth of our sport.
Last thing before I let you go, I do want you to talk about your camps. I've always enjoyed working with you. I think that you think differently. I think you think about things, and the opportunity that people have to be able to send their young people to the things that you do and to be underneath of your leadership, I think is a great thing. So I want you to direct them to the summer camp opportunities that you have available coming up here in just a couple months.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, Tony. It's, you know, when you're in the media, I think we spend a lot of times railing against the current state of things, you know, be it transfer portal, be it NIL, be it, you know, generational, you know, let's talk about the current athlete and what they are thinking. And, you know, I'm very much a believer that we can either sit there and cry at the moon and howl at the moon, or we can try to fix what we see as issues. And the best way to fix anything is locally. And so, you know, my wife and I, as you know, my wife was very much involved with running the Duke camp. You know, I ran that camp for Coach K for over 10 years. When we stopped doing that, we wanted to continue, you know, our love of A, camps, but B, teaching young people. And the best way to do that was locally. And so we started our own camp here in Durham. We run it over at Durham Academy. And it's small, it's boutique, it's by design. You know, we're not trying to grow it to what that Duke camp was, which ultimately became like a tourist camp more than anything else, as you know. So we run it locally. It's very boutique, and we get to sort of, you know, teach values through basketball. You know, we're certainly teaching basketball, but we're teaching values that can carry through life, because that's what sport did for me. And so that's the goal and the hope. So I appreciate you asking about it. It's a lot of fun.
SpitolaBasketballCamps.com.
Yes, sir.
That's Chris Spitola, VSBN and SiriusXM Radio. Always a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tony. Be well, brother.